Now to letters from the evening news. This week people have written in about house building, transport, attacks on the police, and life being simpler years ago. Just how does Norfolk stay special? Writer Stephen Rainberg of Norwich says, in Keith Skipper's column, April the 9th, Norfolk's wasted land is all too apparent in our cruelest month. He posits that Norfolk is at risk from houses being built. Mr. Skipper's suggestion seems to be that we stop building houses and we focus on local need. But there's a massive local need for housing, particularly for young people, as recent reports on housing shortages in this newspaper have shown. Local need is, as elsewhere, for decent accommodation at reasonable prices. The cost of an average house in 1951 was £1,891, which is £63,000 in current terms. Now it's more than £270,000. The average rent for a three-bed in Norwich is £1,200 a month. These eye-watering numbers indicate that we have to build somewhere. Mr. Skipper rues the loss of the countryside, but details golf clubs, rugby clubs and cricket grounds, green, yes, but not bucolic sites of outstanding natural beauty. Besides, such building need not wreck the county. The Anglia Square Tower was an awful proposal that conjured up visions of East Berlin, but the Goldsmith Street development won the RIBA Sterling Prize for architecture. The former was eventually vetoed. The latter provides superb homes for hundreds. So we're not talking about mass pillaging, we're talking about using some land to build homes, ideally beautiful homes, to enable tens of thousands of young people decent, affordable housing in this wonderful county. Surely Mr. Skipper accepts that ought to be afforded that opportunity like the people in the 1950s. The wider point is this, many things that make Norfolk special, its churches, its pubs, even this newspaper, can only go on if people have the money to spend on them. If they are spending it all on housing, how ought those things to go on? How ought Norfolk, in this case, stay special?
Trish Fitzmorris of Wensum Link Citizen Science Group, Trouse, thinks Stockport has transport solution. Earlier this month, councillors in Stockport in Greater Manchester rejected on environmental grounds plans for a major bypass, calling the road an old world solution. It would have cost £500 million and link the M60 and A6. Work has now started on a new transport interchange, and this is the future of transport, said the council leader. In June 2021, the Welsh Government halted new road and road widening projects pending review of their environmental impact. Grant Shapps, the Transport Secretary, has announced in the last few months delays in many major road and junction upgrades due to environmental concerns. The world is changing and must change rapidly. The UK is not on course to meet its net zero carbon emissions by 2050. The carbon released by the road and vehicle construction is incompatible with reaching these targets. What is happening in Norfolk? Norfolk County Council continues to spend millions of pounds pursuing the old world solution of the Western Link Road. The bus service is poor and expensive. My hairdresser informed me that the bus journey from Thorpe St Andrew to the city centre costs £6 per day. It costs the same amount to park her car. How is this trying to reduce car journeys to the city centre? Most bus routes are via the city centre when the ring road could be used instead. Buses bring people into our beautiful but clogged up medieval city centre, only for them to get another bus straight out again. Norfolk County Council, look to the future and deliver an integrated transport plan for Norfolk. Maybe ask Stockport Council how it's done.
Time to get tougher on those who attack the police. comments Peter Tennant of Ormsby St Margaret. Regarding police protection, the headlines concerning the court's protection of police officers from assaults and spitting sums up the whole problem and does reiterate what has been said a number of times. Of course the police feel let down by the people who should be there to protect them. Despite the penalties being increased for these type of offences, this has little effect. As this problem has been mentioned a number of times by the chairman of the Police Federation, it has still not changed. The Home Secretary has recently written to all 650 members of Parliament, asking them to support the police, crime, sentencing and courts bill, now before Parliament. This is likely to include stiffer penalties for certain offences, which may include assaults on the police and other essential workers. But this is in itself will not change the present situation unless the courts react accordingly. The only sure remedy for this outgoing problem is for mandatory penalties for those despicable offences.
John Kerry of Acle thinks that telephone boxes should have stayed. The recent story of the two telephone boxes, accompanied by the suggestion that they could be transformed, prompted the thought that it was a big mistake to scrap the traditional police box. Imagine if they had been retained in mobile updated form, including basic catering and toilet facilities, to be planted in the hearts of those beats most justifying their presence. This would allow officers to travel directly from homes to beats to start work immediately, obviating all the time currently wasted in first reporting for duty to parent stations, to be allocated to patrol beats through which they'd already passed, not to mention trips to station for snacks and comfort breaks. The cost to the taxpayer caused by the abolition of the TARDIS must be massive.
We were poor, but life was simpler, says Frieda Aldous of Swanton Morley. Has the definition of poverty changed? I ask this having heard a family living in poverty could only afford to shower once a week. Being a sickly child born in the 1950s, when there was no NHS, my mother would stand over me while I took some tablets, saying, "Keep them down, your dad had to pay for them." Our two up and two down cottage had open fires downstairs, but no heating upstairs, only feather beds and feather-filled eiderdowns. We had no running water, just an earthenware pot in the pantry, which was never allowed to be empty, or Dad would not be able to prime the pump two doors down. Friday nights, Dad lit the copper in the shed and filled it with rainwater from our two or three rainwater butts. The tin bath was brought in and put in front of the fire. When, being the youngest, I went in first, then my sister, then my mum and dad went in last. Our hair was washed with green fairy soap and rinsed with a jug of clean water. We then dried it, kneeling in front of the fire. We didn't have hair dryers then. My parents only went out of Norfolk a couple of times, never having holidays. My husband and I worked hard, but we were not lucky enough to have children, so we travelled the world and often saw real poverty, like the cardboard village in Morocco and the mud floors in dilapidated shacks in other places. After sadly losing my husband, I moved to a smaller home and I was lucky enough to be able to afford a wonderful new bathroom. But old habits die hard. As a pensioner, I don't shower every day to save on fuel bills. Father grew all the vegetables and gave them free to many village people. My gran had a small farm and we got free milk and butter, so we lived good and happy lives. My parents would have been appalled if we had been considered to be living in poverty. Yes, I do know how hard life is for some families, but there's so much more to buy these days and so much more pressure to have the same as other people. The definition of poverty is very different to what it was in my childhood. I think I was privileged to be born in such a different and, in many ways, an easier time.